You're listening to 91.5 WMFO in Medford. This is the Astro Hour. I'm Zach Going, and that was our...
Days of the week?
Yes, that was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and regretfully not playing Ruby Tuesday.
Are we really regretful about it, though?
I don't know. Were there any other Tuesday songs that we saw that were good? No, it was Blue Monday. I was sad we didn't do Blue Monday. But
right. There's a Simon and Garfunkel song about Tuesday that I don't remember.
I mean, sure. What's it called? I don't want to do
something
it.
Something Tuesday.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing is I really respect Paul Simon as a songwriter, but I believe, and honestly, I think he believes at this point that, like, you know, his, like, hit to ambivalence ratio is pretty low. Like, that's what happens when you, like, when you're so prolific a songwriter is you're going to have a bunch of hits, but you're also, for each hit, you're going to have like 20 songs that are just like,
I mean, isn't that better though than having like songs that people hate?
I completely agree. It's just like, you know, there's like, I'm never going to just go straight through the Simon and Garfunkel discography.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll do that with certain artists, but I wouldn't do that with Simon and Garfunkel.
Who would you do it with?
I'm trying to do that with Bob Dylan.
Okay. Even the like Christian rock stuff?
Yeah. Oh. I'm starting from the beginning-ish. Like the other, because of West Wing season 7, where Matt Santos says that his favorite album is Blonde on Blonde, I listened through all of Blonde on Blonde. I listened through all of Blonde on Blonde, and I was like, oh man, I should really do this with other ones. So I went through, granted, I've done Highway 61 Revisited before, but I went back and did that. And I did I've done Blood on the Tracks before, and I went back and did Blood on the Tracks. I mean, I guess with Bob Dylan, it's really just great albums that happen to be fabulous. But I want to do the stuff in the middle, too.
You know what my favorite Bob Dylan song is?
What?
The one episode of the show Dinosaurs when Robbie, the rebel son, decides he wants to become a herbivore, and they go to the vegetarian club, and there's a Bob Dylan dinosaur puppet who, like, sings about... how this lamb is your lamb. This lamb is my lamb. That's my favorite Bob Dylan song.
Isn't there another one, too, that he sings? I completely forget what...
Give Peas a Chance.
Give Peas a Chance, that's it.
That joke's been made before, though.
Yeah, but, like, it's cute, especially coming from a Bob Dylan thing.
And he starts just naming herbs. It's funny.
I've got a lot of opinions on being vegetarian now, but I don't think this is the right venue to showcase them.
Your college radio show isn't the right venue.
No, I guess it is. Well, I mean, because that's one of my opinions, right, is I find it very fascinating that the only place where I can really say that I'm a vegetarian and the immediate reaction from whoever I say that to isn't, why, is Tufts campus. Like...
I mean, you say that. I would just like to... Now, I love Tufts. It has been very good to you. I have worked here. Mm-hmm. Big fan. But I went to a college that had a legit vegetarian restaurant on campus.
That's pretty cool.
So, you know, when Tufts pretends they're super liberal and fun, I just want to point out that, like...
I'm not even trying to say just Tufts, because Tufts is a... I think the thing that a lot of people end up hating about Tufts is the fact that we are so diverse in people's interests, and I think that bothers some people. Like, there are a lot of people with whom, like, if I said I was a vegetarian on campus, they would go, why? But, like, I would say the majority of people, maybe, like, 60, 70% wouldn't.
The people you have associated yourself with.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, like, anywhere else, like, that is my immediate reaction. At work, that's the reaction.
That's true.
talking to other random adults, that is the reaction. It's just, why? You know? And I'm like, wow, that's very abrasive. Like, I think it's fascinating.
Now, that is true, and that is some people's gut reaction. I think in some cases, there are people who know you and know that you say things like, I don't like animals.
That's true. I don't like... I don't like spending time around animals. I'm not, you know, which honestly might give me more of a level of legitimacy, I suppose. That's not intentional on my part, but I do think it adds credence. I don't like spending time with animals. I don't want to touch animals. For the last week that I was living in my apartment, there was a guinea pig living in my apartment.
Oh, no. Guinea pigs are gross.
I found it, or not guinea pig, it was a hamster.
Even but, grosser.
I found it hard to eat. In the apartment because of that. Because I just don't like being around animals. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
For like the first month that we had Lola, I found it difficult to eat around Lola.
Lola's our puppy.
Lola's our dog, yeah.
Zach has grown
This is
to
my
love
sister
her.
Jessica, by the way.
Hi,
audience.
Everybody. Zach has grown to love Lola.
Yes.
But I understand that to a certain degree. I basically just love dogs and elephants. I'm afraid of birds.
I would touch
an elephant.
I'm allergic
to cats. I like have a healthy respect for cats. I've grown to respect them over the years, but I don't really want to interact with them because they make me cough and sneeze. But I did go to a party in college once where somebody was like, hey, do you want to touch my rats?
Nope.
She was like, they're really nice. You can just pick them and hold them. And I was like, it was nice knowing you.
Yeah.
And then I left. And
when I was, was it at? I forget if it was Port Authority or Penn Station. I think it was Penn Station. There were people playing around with their pet rats in public and letting them like crawl on their shoulders and stuff. And I'm like, this is the worst thing that I've ever seen. Bye-bye.
One time, I don't know if the whole family was with us, but I think it was only Mom and I who noticed we were on a shuttle bus, mm-hmm. Like an Orange Line shuttle bus, which is already the worst thing mm-hmm. that could possibly happen to you in a day. We were on an Orange Line shuttle bus. And there was a woman sitting, and it looked like she was petting, like, a dog or something. So I leaned over because I like dogs.
Ferret.
And turned out it was a ferret.
That's terrible.
It was like, this is my pet ferret. I just carry with me everywhere.
Yeah.
It's the grossest thing I've ever heard. I guess I don't like animals either.
Yeah. No, it's really not. I mean, they just, I don't like them. There is an interesting podcast I was listening to, it was a Vox podcast, of course, where Ezra Klein was interviewing this woman who wrote this book on being a vegetarian, but more specifically on the ideology of meat eaters mm-hmm. and the weird disconnect of it's okay to eat some animals. In fact, it's like encouraged and like our empathy towards some animals has been completely stripped away. Yet, like there are others that aren't, you know, like, it's not okay to eat golden retriever in America, really. It's not socially acceptable. And, like, if you told someone that the burger they were eating was golden retriever, they'd probably spit it out, right? Like, why? Like, why is that, you know? It doesn't necessarily make sense from an ideological standpoint.
Well, I mean, I understand that. I think some animals have jobs, right? Like, dogs have been bred to perform certain jobs, and that's gone away over the years, but like cows have been bred for sustenance.
Fair. But it's still like why specifically is it okay with some and not okay with others, right? Like that's more of a product of this than it is like a reasoning for it.
I mean, maybe. Right? You don't want to eat though the dog that's bringing your child penicillin.
That's like fair, but it's also like you could get a lot of things to do that job, or you could get a non-animal to do the job.
Sled dog.
They have the brandy, like in Isle of Dogs. Did you see Isle of Dogs?
I did see Isle of Dogs. I have a pro dog headband.
Or that's a Saint Bernard. Excuse me.
It is the Saint Bernard.
You have a pro dog headband. Did they send those to us?
No, I bought it.
Oh.
With my own money. I didn't just get it for free at work.
Product. Does it have the Japanese on it?
It does. Okay. And I kind of like, if somebody wants to tell me if that's okay for me to wear, is it like culturally appropriative?
I mean, I think it's fine to wear things with text on it. as long as you know what the text says. I think it's kind of I feel like it's weird Orientalism when you don't know what the text says.
Right. Sure. And I mean, and it has it in English and Japanese, but you know, the movie itself is kind of controversial in terms of talking about culture. Like, I don't want to. I liked it because I like dogs.
Yeah.
But I don't want to, like, I don't necessarily feel comfortable wearing it in public is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Somebody have a discussion with me about that. Let's work it out.
I really do want to hear Wes Anderson's reasoning for why that movie had to take place in Japan.
It did not.
I mean, I can think of some reasons why it helped the theming, but I would like to know what he has to say. Because I think it helped to dehumanize the humans and humanize the dogs by just having them speak another language just in general.
It's not a great reason, though.
I mean, when you're doing it for an English-speaking audience, I think, I guess it's not a great reason. But it did create a good effect, I think. I don't know.
I mean, again, I liked the movie. I can't say absolutely that I didn't find it problematic at all.
Yeah, I agree.
But again, I really like dogs, so...
It's kind of in the same way, though, that I find, like, Moana sort of problematic. But how many Pacific Islanders really worked on that movie? Except Taika Waititi, who wrote the original script. I didn't know that.
That's true, but then left.
Yeah. Because Disney.
Because Disney.
Yeah. Well, and also I think at that point he was being brought on to do Ragnarok, which is also with Disney. But Ragnarok deals a lot less with cultural issues. Except, I suppose, Norse culture. I don't know. It does kind of walk all over Norse culture. Eh. No, because it doesn't even talk about it. It just goes straight into space.
I haven't seen Thor Ragnarok.
You should see Thor Ragnarok. It's the like third best Marvel movie out there.
I might see it eventually. Is it going to be as good as Wonder Woman with my sweet, sweet husband Chris Pine in it, though? I don't think so.
Yes. Yes, it will. It's pretty good. Because it's got the other Chris. It's got Hemsworth. And it's Hemsworth with short hair, which is... I don't know who made the awful decision to give him the long hair in Avengers and the other ones.
Doesn't he have long hair in, like, the comics? Doesn't Thor have long hair?
I think sometimes and sometimes not, but it's still like Chris Hemsworth works more with the short hair. And like, I don't know if it's really necessary that he have Thor comics. You good?
I'm good. I have like a little like tickle in my throat.
Oh, sorry. Continue.
No, go ahead.
No, please.
I was going to talk about the tickle in my throat, so I think You're fine.
He's got like shoulder length blonde hair. Pretty much always. So, okay, I guess that's fair if you want to go with... If you want to go with accuracy, sure, give Thor the hair. But Chris Hemsworth is a lot hotter with short hair.
You know what's fascinating about Chris Hemsworth?
What?
Hemsworth. That he is almost Miley Cyrus's brother-in-law.
Yeah.
She's engaged to lesser Hemsworth.
Well, you know, the other Hemsworth, the older one, is on Westworld.
Oh.
I didn't realize this until two seasons in. And I was like, is Stubbs a Hemsworth? What?
And he was.
And Stubbs is a Hemsworth.
Somebody, what is that? Yeah.
Okay. We're going to put on some music now at our quarter mark for this episode. Here we go. Wait, I need to find the proper channel.
It's been a while for Zachary.
Bye. kicks and talk, and my heart just popped. People love me though, I'm their new Rambo. This is my kingdom, a different kind of home.
That was Anarchy in the UK by the Sex Pistols, followed by Laser Gun by M83. And we got some more music later. First, though, I want to talk about The Incredibles 2. Jessica, give me some thoughts on The Incredibles 2.
I am excited. I want to see it. I wish it was set a little farther in the future.
Completely I would have liked agreed.
To have seen maybe like a Violet like in college. And like a dash in high school, and a bit more of a grown up Jack. Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me to have the immediate jump. I don't think that's what anyone was looking for. And I'm excited to see it, but the sole reason that I'm excited to see it is because it's an incredible sequel, and it's still by Brad Bird, who, despite being terrible, I love his work.
Yeah.
Like that's the only all of the promotional stuff hasn't. I haven't disliked any of the promotional stuff, and I think I'm mildly intrigued by the idea of, like, sort of looking through, like, it seems very second shifty to me. The second shift, it's some feminist analysis of women in the workplace and analyzing, like, how, like, the generation of working women starting, like, around the 70s then also had to go home and do all of the domestic stuff that they were, like, societally inclined mm-hmm. to do, right? And it seems to kind of be tackling that with the, like, Mr. Incredible being, like, home and domestic while...
It's a Mr. Mom type.
Yeah, it's a Mr. Mom type thing.
Yeah, I'm really into the Elastigirl storyline. I'm into the Mr. Incredible being supportive and helping her so she can help further the cause.
Yeah, and, like, learning how to do that. I think that's... There's potential there. There's narrative potential.
I am not here for the Jack discovering his powers storyline.
Yeah, that seems dumb.
The them dealing with it it doesn't seem interesting, and it looks in the advertising like it's going to be a major plot point, and I'm not about it.
Is it going to be a major plot point, or is that going to be, is that the BB-8 of this movie?
Oh, it might be.
I hope that that's what they're going for, where Jack-Jack's the BB-8 who's just kind of there to entertain, which I think is dumb. I hate when movies do that, when they don't trust children to enjoy the comedy of the rest of the film or the seriousness of the rest of the film. Oh, I love robots.
Nah, because BB-8.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish... I mean, when it first got announced, I was really hoping for a 14-year time jump to talk about aging parents, to talk about, like, adult children. I thought that'd be interesting. But then I was like, I would settle for, like, a 5-year time jump, or I'd settle for, like, a 4-year time jump.
14 seems a little...
14's
intense.
A lot. Yeah. Well, 14 is what it is, right? Which is why I was so interested.
I understand.
Because that's what Toy Story did, right?
Yeah, but Toy Story's gaps were a little more manageable.
Yeah.
And I nobody wants to see, like, aging Mr. Incredible.
I mean, like, disagree.
I do. You and I do, but that's a very specific group of people. That is not necessarily the most exciting story that could be
fair.
Told. And
I think it would partially be too similar to the plot of the first one, where... Or the beginning of the first one, where he's sort of learning that he can't do what he could do in the past, sort of. And then they sort of kind of write away of that.
The feeling of uselessness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's certainly in the first one, and they could have done that in this, but I don't think they will. Or I think they will, but in a different way.
It seems like it's a different story, which I can appreciate.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I want to see it. I want to love it. I don't know if I will, which is sad because it has so much potential.
I am hopeful. I am trying to go in with an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
I hear there's going to be more Edna Mode. I like Edna.
I hope so. Who voices Edna Mode?
It's not Brad Bird, is it?
It might actually be Brad Bird.
I think it's Brad Bird. I think it's one of the situations of, like, nobody could do the voice like Brad was doing it, so then we had Brad do it.
Where's the robot, Mansley? He's voiced by Brad Bird. Yeah, you're right.
Oh.
Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, that's impressive. Now I'm just looking at a picture of Brad Bird next to Edna Mode. Wow, there's a lot of things about Edna Mode written in her Wikipedia page. It's actually kind of surprising, considering that she was in the first film for all of 10 minutes.
Oh, but her scene with Helen when she's, like, crying because she's worried Bob's having an affair,
mm-hmm,
is kind
God,
of magnificent.
Such an adult movie. I love
it. It's so good. Real quick, what was I going to say about Brad Bird? Nope, it's gone. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It wasn't about Brad Bird. It was about, you know, the woman who voices Violet?
Sure.
How she got cast?
No.
She's like a scientist or something, and she filmed, like, a podcast of, like, her doing an experiment with her dad or something, and then, like, I think Brad Bird heard it for whatever reason, mm-hmm, and was like, I like her voice. Let's get her to be Violet. So she's not an actor at all. She just, like...
She's voiced by Sarah Vowell.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now she's a contributing editor for This American Life.
Hey, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe she wasn't a scientist, but she was some radio person.
Yeah, she's a historian. But
when
yeah.
we start our podcast, I like to think I also have kind of a distinct voice. Somebody cast me in a Disney movie.
I can't sing, but I
can talk.
I could do that. She worked with David Sedaris. That's cool.
David Sedaris is very cool.
I like David Sedaris. What's his relation to Amy Sedaris?
I don't think any.
No, there has to be.
Look it up, but I don't think any.
I thought they were related
just
somehow.
Two funny people who have the same last name.
No, I definitely think they're related. Yeah, no, they're brother and sister.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
Hey, we could be them. We could not.
David
we're not
and Amy
that funny.
Sedaris. No, we're that funny.
I no. I think we think we're that funny.
Whenever I think of Amy Sedaris, I immediately think of her saying BoJack.
Have you watched her show At Home with Amy Sedaris?
No.
Oh,
I've seen like trailers.
Oh, you gotta watch it. I'm gonna make you watch
anything
it.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, I stopped recommending stuff for you to watch. Play a song or something.
Yeah, hold on. Wait. There's.
Are you gonna play a song from the best album of 2015, Carly Rae Jepsen's Emotion?
No. Although I do. I was trying to explain to one of the newbies at work that I liked Emotion, because I was saying that I hated the song at the end of RBG. There's a song that plays at the end of RBG, and I hated it. I forget who wrote it, but I was just like, this is dumb. And then another person was just like, don't you hate pop music? And I'm like, I don't hate pop music. I love Carly Rae Jepsen's Emotion, and I also love the album that is, in my opinion, the pinnacle of pop music, which is Fleetwood Mac's Tango in the Night. So, it's a great album. Great album. You got one there, Jess?
Okay.
Or I might do Tango in the Night. Continue.
Okay. Some numbers to think about. The United States has less than 5% of the planet's population, but incarcerates 24% of its prisoners and accounts for 43% of the world's total military spending. A public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Here's a song by the Muppets.
Together again, again. Gee, it's good to be together again, again. I just can't imagine that you've ever been gone. It's not starting over, it's just going on.
Together again, again. Now we're here and there's no need remembering when.
Cause no feeling feels like that feeling.
Together again.
Again, again, again.
Together again, again. Gee, it's good to be together again, again. I just can't imagine that you've ever been gone. It's not starting over, it's just going on.
Together again, again. Now we're here and there, no need to remember.
Cause no feeling feels like that feeling.
We're running again, again.
Ever been gone. It's not starting over, it's just going on.
Together again, again. Gee, it's good to be together again, again. Cause no feeling feels like the feeling.
Together, together,
together again.
Oh,
And we're back. That was Together Again by the Muppets from the end of Muppets Most Wanted, a film that should have been called The Muppets Again. And it's definitely... This is the only conspiracy theory I think I actually subscribe to. I don't even know if it's conspiracy theory so much as it is that the word again is prominently featured throughout the entire film, and The Muppets Again would have been a great name for that movie. And it sounds just like Disney to say, hey, we've got a movie that could have this great title. Let's change it to something more flashy.
Like a Great Mouse Detective situation?
Wait, what's the name of the Great Mouse Detective?
The Great Mouse Detective, the movie,
yeah,
was supposed to be called Basil of Beaker Street. What's the name of the street Sherlock Holmes lives on?
Baker Street.
Yeah, it was supposed to be Basil of Baker Street.
You're thinking Bleecker Street, where Doctor Strange lives in the village?
Potentially.
Maybe.
Basil of Baker Street was the name for the Great Mouse Detective, and then Jeffrey Katzenberg came in and was like, nope, we're changing it. The kids won't know what it is. We're calling it the Great Mouse Detective.
I mean, yeah, but I think Great Mouse Detective is a great name.
I mean,
The Muppets Again is a great name, too.
It is.
Muppets Most Wanted is not a great name, although it was a good movie.
I never saw it.
You never saw Muppets Most Wanted?
I know. I'm a bad Muppet fan.
It is very different from the Jason Segel one, in that I think the Jason Segel one tries to be more like, okay, if the Jason Segel one is to The Force Awakens what Muppets Most Wanted is to The Last Jedi.
Okay, I've seen neither of those movies.
Neither. So, Force Awakens. Let's start from the beginning.
Can I just make an assumption right now?
Yeah, fine.
So, are you saying that it, like, reestablishes the world, like, and is very classic to the world, Force Awakens, and then Muppets Most Wanted breaks the mold, Last Jedi?
No. Well, so, like, sort of. I wouldn't quite say, like, is true to the world. I would say its primary emotion is sentimentality.
Okay.
And, the Jason Segel Muppet movie is a movie about what the Muppets mean to people.
Yes.
Which is beautiful, and it's a story that you can tell once. And The Last Jedi is a movie about what Star Wars means to people, and it's beautiful, and you can tell it once. And then you if you're going to keep making movies, you need to start actually, like, innovating and being creative, and that's what The Last Jedi does. It tells a really challenging and interesting story. And I think, I don't know if Muppets Most Wanted tells a challenging story, but it definitely doesn't rely on Muppets nostalgia at all. It tries very hard to just be like a Muppet movie, like the way The Great Muppet Caper was, where, like, they're just like, cool, we got these cast of characters, let's make a funny movie.
Right.
Yeah.
The Great Muppet Caper is so good.
Great Muppet Caper is awesome. I think Muppets Take Manhattan, I prefer.
Muppets Take Manhattan is my favorite Muppet movie.
I love the opening number in Great Muppet Caper so much.
It's so good.
In a movie.
I love the Great Muppet Caper purely because Kermit and Fozzie are twins.
Yeah. Well, that's the best thing about the Muppets is when they play on that. Like,
it's true. And so it makes sense. And I think, you know, the Muppets have existed for so long now that every once in a while you need to do, like, a refresh, like, here's a cast of characters and they're playing in a show, The Muppets. And then you can do things like Muppets Most Wanted, which I still haven't seen, like the Muppet movie, The Great Muppet Caper, and play with the mold. And I think they even tried to do that with, I mean, if you look at, like, after Jim Henson died and you have your sort of 90s Muppets, you have, like, Muppets Tonight, which tried to redo the Muppet Show. And I think a really interesting way. I'm a big Muppets Tonight fan.
It updated it for what the late night shows were at the time.
And I think even, like, Muppets in Space in the movies plays on that Muppets nostalgia a little bit, and, like, how important, right, you're talking about how important the Muppets are.
You're talking about, like, the meta-narrative of the Muppets, right? Of that the Muppets are actually actors playing. Like, because some of the movies, Muppets Treasure Island, Great Muppet Caper, I think to a degree, Muppets Take Manhattan, are movies that the Muppets star in.
Right.
But Muppets in Space is a movie about the actors who play the Muppets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, though, because I agree, Muppets Take Manhattan is its own story, but also still has the meta-narrative of them being performers.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's the best one, because it's a blend of both of that.
Yeah.
both of them.
And I mean, but that's the first Muppet movie too is the same, right? It's the story of how the Muppets got their start. I'm using air quotes for those in the audience. The story of how the Muppets got their start, but really it's like the story. It treads right. the line very well.
Yes. I mean, it's your ultimate meta narrative.
Yeah. In the same way that I think all of the TV shows have done.
I'll say it again. I liked the new Muppets TV show.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I think the first half of the season is rough. And then the second half...
It's a little inconsistent.
Yeah. I mean, they switched the entire writing staff for the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Which is a sign of a show that is falling towards disaster.
Yes.
But any show with Jack White in it and the Muppets, I think, is fabulous.
Jack White was only on one episode.
He was on the final episode, though. He sang... He's got the best scene, which is when... Kermit is driving his car. I love the fact that Kermit is like driving around LA. I just think it's great.
It's a very ambitious show
It tries so hard to be what like Hollywood and the TV industry is now. Like it tries very hard to be true to what I think TV is.
Yeah, it has like a Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of like vibe to it.
Yes.
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 Or even like take another show that I like that I've watched more than Curb Your Enthusiasm, like episodes.
Yeah.
It has like a real kind of like...
It has the, oh man, doesn't life suck that we have to drive around LA every day?
It's
and
very
go
in
to the
weeds.
Studio.
And I think that's why people didn't like it, because I think there are people who like that sort of thing and there are people who don't like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are getting sick of the sort of stuff about Hollywood, but yeah. I still get a kick out of it.
And the idea, it seemed very earnest, the idea that the show now is just like a multicam classic talk show starring Miss Piggy, who is the like first woman to ever have one of these late night talk shows.
I will say that's a great episode in the first half of the season when she's dating Josh Groban.
Yeah.
And Josh Groban is like giving her all these ideas about like what the show should be, and Kermit's like, you're really gonna let a man influence you? It really throws her off.
Yeah. Well, because they need to get Groban out, which is how they do that. The other good episode is when Scooter dates Chelsea Handler, and she wants to make things physical way too fast. but capturing the somewhat pointlessness of the lifestyle too, which is like it's a little cynical for the Muppets, but the show itself I think still had like the positive tone that the Muppets needed. Anyway, my favorite scene.
Oh, sorry.
Kermit's driving, and he drives up next to Jack White, who's in like his vintage cars, because he only drives vintage cars or whatever. And he's listening to "You Are the Sunshine of My Life" by Stevie Wonder, which is Kermit and Piggy's song. And he's like, Kermit turns to the side, and he's like, Jack White, like you're listening to our song. And he goes, our song? I thought our song was Froggy Went A-Courtin'. And he goes, no, no, no. And then they just like sit on a park bench and like talk about life for a little bit. It's great. And then he helps them woo piggyback, which is great. That's the finale of that show.
I think it's nice. I think it was nice to have a show where you were like, Kermit and Piggy date. I can't use the word I wanted to use.
Yeah. Well, and the other pig, too. Denise, that's what it was.
I like Denise, too.
Denise was great.
I like the writer's room stuff with Gonzo and Pepe and Rizzo.
I like them living in an apartment together.
Together
I think that's
after
funny.
Camilla, like, breaks up with... I liked that it was like, let's try to humanize the Muppets even more. I don't know. I thought it was a fun show.
It was very,
watched another season.
It was very Muppets in Space, I think, in that way. Because I think Muppets in Space is the one that really gets to that, like... These are the real lives of actors sort of thing, or producers, writers, whatever, of
creatives.
Showbiz people. Yeah, creatives. Very well. Like, because my favorite part about Muppets in Space is that they're just all living in, like, the same boarding house, and they're just, like Kermit's, like, managing all of them. And there's that one scene where, like, Kermit's like, Gonzo, weren't you, like, supposed to play the bar mitzvah today? Or no, it's, Fozzie. He's like, Fozzie, weren't you supposed to play the bar mitzvah today? And Fozzie's like, no, I got the Electric Mayhem to cover me. And you suddenly see the Electric Mayhem walk by all dressed as Hasidic Jews. And then Dr. Teeth looks in the camera and just goes, Shalom. And walks away.
I love the Muppets. Anybody who doesn't love the Muppets.
Muppets are important.
They are important.
Muppets are important.
I understand maybe you weren't brought up with them. I'm referring specifically to the person I am dating who...
Dan doesn't know the Muppets?
He's not really a big Muppets person. And
it's weird.
It's hard for me, and I haven't been able to like subtly introduce the Muppets yet.
Just gotta go, here's the greatest movie of all time. We're gonna watch it.
I have to get through one episode, one Lord of the Rings movie first, and I keep falling asleep before we can get to the Muppets. It's very hard. They're so long.
Lord of the Rings movies are dumb, sorry.
Their voices are so soothing. Like, I like the first 20 minutes, I like the Shire, and then I'm like, I'm out.
Shire is the most soothing part, though, to be honest.
Yeah, well, so it lulls me, and then they're like, okay, we're gonna trot along on our clippity-cloppity horses, and I'm gonna go to sleep. Play a song. Are you gonna play a Carly Rae Jepsen song, please?
No, I'm gonna play a live Talking Heads song.
We dress like housewives, or in a suit and a tie.
That was the Talking Heads with Life During Wartime. So, Jessica, here is a trivia question I was asked at Trivia on Tuesday.
The trivia you went to with five girls?
Yes, correct.
Somebody texted me and they said, Zachary is at PJ Ryan's for trivia with five girls. Yeah.
Thanks, Matt Ryan.
It was very scandalous.
Fill in the blank. Fill in the blank.
Okay.
Knight, McIntyre, Knight, Wood, blank.
Knight, Reba McIntyre.
Knight, McIntyre, Knight, Wood, blank.
Knight, Reba McIntyre, Knight, Fleetwood, Mac.
No.
Okay.
Do you got this, Chris?
I don't have this one.
Come on. I didn't get this. No. That is Wahlberg. That is the New Kids on the Block. Knight, McIntyre, Knight, Wood, and Wahlberg.
Not a big band that I listen to.
I don't know. You've got a very diverse taste in music, Chris.
I'm too not young for that.
Even though that they're local, no?
I think that brings us to our show today.
Yeah.
Do you have any final words, Jessica?
I wish we played Carly Rae Jepsen's Emotion.
Yep, I'm glad we didn't. I don't mind the song. It's a good song. It doesn't fit my sound.
You're being very judgmental.
I'm not being judgmental.
Just like you won't eat animals.
That's true. Occasionally, but I'm trying not to.
All right, let's move on. I got a cough.
All right. Thank you for listening. This has been the Astro Hour. Stay tuned for Strike the Box. It's going to be fun. It's like my show, but with better music and better production values. Oh, no problem, Chris. No problem, Chris. And here we go. 91.5 WFM Medford.